This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 5th of February, 1954. The title of this lecture is Endowment of Livingness, Extroverting Attention. This lecture is 62 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
All right, and this is February the 5th, 1954. Going to talk some more here about the endowment of livingness. Endowment. And it's just what we were coming up on here this morning. It fits in with some examples which we have just had concerning this and that. I have told you constantly and continually, at one time, concept running was all we had. You know, I mean, it was as good as we could go, and it has a certain workability. Concepts with certainty do unbalance these interposed communication lines. They do upset this. There's some workability to these. But I call your attention to this, that running a concept is endowing with life. It's endowing something with life, right? Now, the individual who is still handling his body with beams, who has just been exteriorized, who is just outside, you might say, rather tippily, you ask this individual to run something like a concept in an effort to exhaust or disendow or do something of the sort, you know. I mean, something that's going to take a moment or two. Concept, you know, is something the idea a fellow holds or inspects or examines very carefully. And we ask him to run a concept when he's just outside of the body, and what happens? He, of course, starts putting out energy. These beams, which he still has firmly attached to the body, although he's not looking at them yet, he probably hasn't shifted off into the band where he sees them, these beams light up, and everything that he has in common with the body has a tendency to liven a little bit. Now, what is occurring there is the individual is endowing the body again with life, merely because these communication lines are, in the main, connected to the body. So we have put a life endowment in the body. Therefore, the individual seems to be in the body more than he is outside of the body. Now, one of the neatest ways to de-exteriorize an individual will be to back him out of his head and have him run a concept. You see why that is? Back him out of his head, ask him to run a concept of some sort. The ridges in his head liven up, which gives them life. He grants them beingness, you know. And as soon as that occurs, he then appears to be more alive in his head than he is outside of his head. Elementary. But there is a very simple situation. Now, when an individual has just been exteriorized, you want to get his attention onto the environment. Get his attention off of that body and onto the environment so that you will endow the environment a little bit. Now, one of the reasons the individual has had a hard time and exteriorizing or has been in a body is because he hasn't been able to grant any life to the environment. You see that? And not being able to grant life to the environment, why, he's had a bad struggle of it. He's disendowing the environment, you might say. Do you know that an individual who is really seeing a scene alive, you know, the scene is just vibrantly alive, a beautiful morning or something like that, he is existing just as much in those beautifully colored clouds and in those mountains. He's just as alive in those as he would be if he were thinking about it in his body. This is the ne plus ultra of conceiving beauty. You have to endow the mist and whatever else the person might be looking at, such as mock-ups or something of the sort, they have to have a certain endowment. He has to give them a certain endowment in order for them to be sharply perceptible. Now, this feeling aliveness is something which Preclear desires very much. He'd love to feel alive. Well, as a secondary solution, he makes the body feel alive because he himself doesn't feel alive, you see. He doesn't have any large concept of his own power or force. And feeling alive, he has a good certainty where he is. But not feeling alive, he doesn't have a very good certainty where he is. It's elementary. Certainty, knowingness, life, these are similar manifestations. All right, we exteriorize somebody and run a concept. The next thing you know, boom. why the body's more alive than the environment is. And therefore, the body is more feelable. You know, he can feel the body. Let's say his perception is very poor, very bad. Well, he's depending on a sense of feel to know where he is. Well, if he's depending on a sense of feel to know where he is, he'd certainly better get some sensation into the walls, not by directly putting sensation into the walls, because this, again, is asking him to handle a lot of energy. So the best techniques on this sort of thing are straight wire techniques. Very light, sharp, straight wire techniques, which give him a different environment. Now, I've done this process for you several times. You'll notice I generally throw in a different body. You know, get the lion you just exteriorized out of. Pretend you just exteriorized out of a lion, something of the sort. You've thrown aside the individual's beam patterns, made him create another set of beam patterns. But even then, if you ran concepts with regard to the lion, why, you'd re-energize the body. So the same thing would work. So we give him an entirely different kind of body. Now, we never ask the individual to look at his body. This is more and more fatal as we go along. We see this as a more and more fatal process. Ask the individual to look at his body. It's even probably better processing to tell an individual to be 3 feet back of his chair than 3 feet back of his body. It's probably better processing. Now, not a must or mandatory, but I mean, if we're going to carry this all the way out, you'd tell an individual to be 3 feet back of his chair. All right. Now, the dwindling scale of aliveness, the dwindling spiral of aliveness, is a smaller and smaller perimeter of aliveness. You see this. An individual one time was alive out there about 80 miles or 8 light years or something in all directions. Now, because there are various things in those areas which he objects to, his perimeter of aliveness, his zone, we've been calling these various things zones, his zone of aliveness is decreasing year by year, life by life, until at last he's only alive in the body. Now, that's an incredible situation for a person to be alive only in a body. He thinks he has to be alive in the body to handle the body. Well, that means he must be pretty well crushed in by the universe. One of the reasons we try to start this avalanche rolling is simply to crush through the protective screens, and by feeding the energy starvation which he has conceived that he has, and so forth, by feeding it, we crush through the various screens which are compressing this zone of aliveness. See, the whole messed universe, he feels, is crushing in on him on that zone of aliveness, and yet he has a hunger for the messed universe. Well, let's solve these two things at once, feed him enough energy, and so on, and get away, break up, throw away those screens which the individual has erected against the continuous and constant inflow of the messed universe. Now, your 5 case and other such cases simply have these screens right up close, that's all, and reversed. And they've got these screens there which are preventing the messed universe from knocking them to pieces. And their control mechanism is worse and worse, more and more and more. And their zone of aliveness is smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller in their immediate vicinity. Until at last, in a 5, you normally have only a small portion of the body still alive and that zone of aliveness. Now, actually, this goes out in terms of the dynamics. You can plot the dynamics this way. Let's draw a little tiny circle around the preclear skull, inside it or outside, doesn't matter. And we'll say, now, the area or the mass of this little circle would be the first dynamic. Now, let's draw a concentric circle just a little bit further out. Let's take a concentric circle out there about a yard and draw that all the way around. Actually, these things go more to the front where an individual is in the body than to the rear. It's not a regular circle. It dents in at the back. But this is the second dynamic. It's out there about a yard. And now we go to the third dynamic, and that's out there 12, 15 feet. We have a circle there, 12, 15 feet. That would be zone of aliveness. Not just third dynamic. That would be his zone of aliveness. Now, this individual who was alive out there 12 or 15 feet would have a fairly good... just arbitrarily plot this, give you the picture, he'd have a fairly good third, second, and first dynamic. He'd be fairly good on that, but he'd be terrible on the fourth, and he probably wouldn't be too good on the fifth. and he probably would be having a kind of a rough time with the sixth. And as far as the seventh was concerned, he could be brought right to his knees with threats of spirits and hidden influences. And in terms of the eighth dynamic, well, certainly he might go out there 15 feet all right, but that eighth dynamic going out there infinity in all directions, that's just completely beyond his comprehension. See, so he just, all he could do would be kind of succumb apathetically and not know on the subject of God and infinity. So that would be the picture. But let's say that your individual has his fourth zone alive. Well, now if he's got his fourth zone alive, well, for gosh sakes, he's at least got this sphere covered fairly well, called Earth. His zone aliveness is out that far. And now let's take the fifth, and he also has other types of Earth alive, and thinks that if life forms were elsewhere in the universe and so forth, that he could cover these to some slight degree. And now we get the zone of aliveness of the sixth dynamic. We go out to the limits of the messed universe as his zone of aliveness. Oh boy, a guy that would be zone, if he were really alive out there to the sixth, that's pretty far. Well, he'd have to start taking in all of life in any universe to actually get into the seventh dynamic, and to get into the eighth dynamic, he would have to take in all universes, all things, everywhere, as a potential aliveness. Now, if you just ask a preclear sometime to expand his awareness. If you ask a preclear to expand his awareness to some distance, he may shudder, or he may do it. It's quite interesting. It doesn't require a long communication ritual or formula for an individual to do this at times. You just say, be alive now throughout this room. Well, now you're actually asking him to do that when you say, be the space of your body, be the space of the room. And there you're increasing his zone of aliveness. Now you can take a Thetan any time and ask him to do this. But remember that when you're asking him to be the space of his body, again, we're liable to liven up and give more personalness to the body itself than is immediately desirable. So if you'd said, limit this technique, be the space back of your chair, now be the space of the room, the space back of your chair, the space of the room, we would actually be doing a better process. Because you're getting his attention on the environment. Well, one of the exercises you could give an individual, this is not good processing, but I mean one of the exercises you could give somebody, this one I repeat is not very good processing. Merely because it doesn't have much workability, is get him to find nothing and have him start granting personality to it. You're asking him to grant personality in the absence of mass. Well, actually, when you exteriorize somebody, you're asking him to grant personality to nothing. You know, be nothing, have no mass by which somebody else can discern personal traits, and then have a personality. Now, when this individual is entirely dependent on other people assigning him a name, a personality, and so forth, you're asking him to do quite a trick, aren't you? You're saying, well, now you be back there with no face and no clothes and so on, and let's have a personality. Well, it'd be bad processing to ask somebody to, really not good processing, not necessarily bad, but not good processing, to ask him to mock up nothing and assign personality to it. There's an easier way to do this. You ask the individual to put an emotion in something and then feel another emotion himself. I'll give you an example of this. I'm not addressing this to anybody in particular. The pattern that went along with this would be something like this. All right, he's 3 feet back of his head, see. And uncertain perception, but he has, you say, pick out the realest thing in the room to you, and he finally selects, if he selects his body, shift his attention to something else, but he finally picks out a pillow. And you say, all right, now put some apathy in the pillow. Now while the pillow is feeling apathetic, you feel some boredom. Now, while the pillow is still feeling apathetic, you feel some resentment. And here we go, just that sort of a drill. Now you make him, for instance, hold some resentment and change the emotion in the pillow. But if you did this very long, you'd be granting personality to the pillow, and you'd find the individual actually could interiorize into the pillow and feel quite personal. Very amusing. But he's stacked up the pillow with enough beingness so that he can be it. Now, you're liable to give too much weight to this granting of beingness and endowment, because an individual can endow and disendow with great speed. You're liable to give too much importance to this. But it is important, and very important, where you ask the individual to run a concept while he's exteriorized, because it alivens the beams. And here we go. The beams liven up, the body livens up, and all the computive machinery which the individual has set up goes alive. And, of course, the body then has more life than where he has. So don't put his attention on the body. Now, when we say don't look at the body, it isn't that it'll scare him to death or something of the sort. It's just that when he looks at the body, he is, to some degree, energizing it. Now, there are people who have gotten out with great certainty and then been fixated by the auditor on the body, you know, look at the body, do this or that to the body. The auditor is so sold on psychosomatic ills. This is the reason why, by the way, the basic reason why psychosomatic illness is not something you address with theta clearing in the early stages. You just skip it. Because this person exteriorizes with some certainty. He's in pretty good shape. And then the auditor says to him, now, how about fixing up the body? And, of course, the pre-clear starts energizing the body. And the next thing you know, his perception goes off. You can't understand exactly why this occurred. His perception went off. No, he re-interiorized. Body became more alive than he was. Now, we used to run this process of pat the body on the head and say, poor body. I haven't done that for some time. This does have an effectiveness, because it does get the pre-clear to determine a separateness. And the reason why he has an identity with the body is his continuous co-experience with the body. Co-experience with this one body. And the sympathy has a tendency, on a lot of cases, to suddenly break down. The sympathetic rapport, you might say, with the body breaks down, and sometimes with an awful crash. Well, it's not necessarily bad processing to say, poor body. But it's not optimum processing either. Best thing to do is contained right there in 8C. You can run all sorts of things out of 8C which assist stabilization. But the closer those things come to energizing concepts in the body, why, the worse the process is. Locationally is very good. Locational processes are the best, because you're trying to stabilize him somewhere. Now, if you were to ask somebody to be 3 feet back of his head and then find some raw dirt and paw it, that's not a bad process. That's a pretty good process. You've immediately asked him to do what he's going to do in the course of his interest very shortly anyhow. A thetan does the weird thing of going around and looking at mess. Oh, he gets so fascinated with a grain of sand. He gets very fascinated with this and with that. You're liable to exteriorize somebody sometime, and he sits in the body's sitting there in the chair, and nothing's happening, you know. You get no response, something of the sort. You sent the fellow someplace, and after a while, you get very curious as to what he's doing. He must be fooling around someplace, and you feel he must have either fooled around or doped off or done something. Well, you find out he's outside in the yard, or he's landed on a beach someplace, and he's busy looking at something. He's watching something. And what's he thinking? He's not thinking a darn thing. That's what's curious. It's pure interest with no computive activity. He's just looking. Now, one of the things I've seen a person do shortly after exteriorization, after the session, They've been someplace by themselves, lying down in the bed, and drifted off themselves and gone out someplace into the Indian Ocean or someplace, and fool around with some of their lines. And they'll tell you this, they name them themselves, their anger line, and shove it down into the water and let it bubble for a while. And curious things like this. Well, these things are not very computive. They go get interested in something, or they turn something on or off in this fashion. Now, the essence of processing and exteriorization and interiorization is, of course, location. The essence is location. You're asking a person to be in a certain geographical locale, and his ability to handle himself in this universe depends upon his ability to be in all geographical locales in the universe. Let's take one of those pre-logics wherein we find that theta locates things in space and time and creates space and objects to locate in the space. Those are the pre-logics. Now, it's quite important, and it has everything to do with this exteriorization. Now, the foes of location are all those manifestations which, whether they're cousins or brothers, append to gravity, magnetism, certain things like that. The Thetan gets into an area which pulls on him. And he is as difficult to exteriorize and interiorize as he believes in gravity and believes in magnetic influences and so on. And when he believes these things very strongly, this is a matter of consideration, then they can have a considerable influence upon him. So he is very happy to be 10,000 miles out from Earth, but feels a little afraid of coming any closer. That's because of the gravity of Earth. You ask him to go inside and outside and inside and outside. A mass of any kind, and the first thing he runs into is this thing called gravity or pull. Now, this can be done this way. You can say, now be near the moon, near the sun, near Earth. Not exteriorization, interiorization, just near gravitic masses. And he flips from one to the other, round, 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 round. And doggone, he said, this is funny. I have a hard time getting away from these things. Well, that wears off rather quickly. And then you interiorize him and exteriorize him from things, and he has a hard time interiorizing, a hard time exteriorizing at first, and then that wears off rather quickly, and he can interiorize and exteriorize at will. What's happened there? His consideration, called gravity or magnetic pull, has deteriorated. So he doesn't believe that he has such a pull on him anymore. Another thing, of course, is he's packing around mass, which is in itself is attractive to that. Almost anybody discovers where you process this, that gravity is a consideration. This becomes suddenly a big certainty with them. And they begin to feel very foolish for having been caught in theta traps and so forth. The idea of being caught in a body becomes rather silly. In the first place, how could they be caught in a body? Well, it's just a continuous endowment of that body with life and their own personality, which pulls them down to that immediate area. But aside from this point, gravity is a consideration. People become very certain of this. All right, now let's take up the other problem of the Thetan. Besides the problem of location, you might say this is a consideration problem, again, like gravity. And that's what he feels he doesn't know. A Thetan can be deteriorated only by not knowingness. What he feels he doesn't know. Now, I have exteriorized several of the roughest cases you ever walked into just with not know. And done it more or less in this fashion. Now, find somewhere around here three areas of blackness that you don't have to know about. And we go on from there with blackness, and now give me three people you don't have to know what they're doing, and three more you don't have to know what happened to them, and desensitize his compulsion to know. His compulsion to know is a compulsive admission that he doesn't. And this is just a matter of consideration, of course. As long as one has a compulsion to know, he is admitting to himself that he doesn't know. See that? So you just get things he doesn't have to know about. Well, I've taken a fellow who was very badly off and who was rough to exteriorize and so forth, and found out that all the processes that were being run on him were processes which pointed up his not knowingness. You see that? I mean, he's just been audited in the direction of not knowingness. Sudden surprises, sudden find outs, and so forth. Well, let's just take and ease this thing off and find some things he doesn't have to know about. And that stops, to a large extent, his continual, relentless search through the bank to find the C ends of the CE lines. As long as he's racking around through the bank trying to find C here and C there and C someplace else, all exterior to him, he's just convincing himself of his own effect, himself as an effect. A black case is being effect. The only reason he can be an effect is because he doesn't know. Knowingness and not knowingness pulls an individual too out of energy, and that's a desirable thing. Avalanches are all right, but after they've served their purpose, you can turn around then and turn on the outward avalanche, and you've just about done it. And as far as energy is concerned, you don't have to pay any attention to energy after that. You just get him out into knowingness and sightseeingness, and he just goes around and gets interested in the universe, and his potentialities come up along the line, and then his communication capabilities and the rest of the 8-0, which I have listed for you, capabilities are worked with there. But these are abilities minus energy for the most part. Now, an auditor who puts the pre-clear continually at the E end of the communication line, or actually validates the fact that there is a C end or an E end of the communication line during auditing, is doing a poorer job than one who simply neglects this factor. He's working with the pre-clear rather than trying to make the pre-clear an effect of his own auditing. Now, those individuals process most poorly who simply specialize in processes which make the pre-clear into a terrific effect. Let me give you an example. I know, by the way, I probably know, I could probably sit here and list about 50 different phenomena which can be turned on in an individual with considerable violence. You won't turn them on doing the processes you're doing, but they require rather special mechanics in order to turn these things on. But boy, do they make an effect out of a pre-clear. And let's take not one of these 50 I just mentioned, these are just mental phenomena. But let's take a mental physical, you know, let's take that as a difference, mental physical, a thetan plus body sort of thing. Now we find out that there are a few practitioners around, we won't call them auditors, a few practitioners around who will specialize in making the pre-clear into an effect. Well, so does the Catholic Church try to make the individual into an effect continually. Well, what is this phenomena? It's trying to put somebody on an E end of a communication line. You know, big effect. You turn on terrific somatics in him, you give him a lot of things that are new and strange and odd and so on. Wham, 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 you see. And you're just putting him more and more on the EN. And he says, look what this auditor or what this practitioner or what this priest can do to me. And this is remarkable because he has a sort of a hunger. Just as he has this hunger that is the source of this avalanche, so he has this hunger to be in effect. He thinks. That's the DEI cycle. So an individual quite often will sit there very willingly and be that effect, but it isn't making him any better. It's very spectacular, but it's actually making him worse. CO2, electric shock, are manifestations of this. There's people around who are just screaming psychotics, actually, who've just got to give people CO2. They just got to, they just got to, they just got to. I said to one of these fellows one time, I said, what the hell is the matter with you? Why don't you go out and beat up sheep or tease lizards or something? What do you want to fool around with CO2 on preclears for? Got to create an effect on somebody that big. Why don't you go be a cop and beat up bums or something? You don't have to get into the field of psychotherapy to do this. Oh, you'd just be afraid of CO2. You'd just be afraid of CO2. I said, have you ever taken one? Yes, yes, I take them all the time. He was saying, the odd part of it is this boy was one of the super, super no-audit cases early in Dianetics. You know, the boy who could get him down on a couch hadn't been born. And yet he had gone into this, got to have an effect, got to have an effect. He was just super dramatizing the need for a delivery of impact and so forth. Hunger, a hunger that becomes an obsessive psychosis. There is not a psychiatrist in the business who handles electric shock, who is even vaguely, in anybody's classification, sane. They're not even vaguely sane, these boys. You possibly wouldn't agree with me on this, but it would only because you hadn't talked to these boys. They just non-sequitur, they disassociate and so forth. Yet they walk around and go about their business with a certain mannerism that is interesting to the public. But I have seen one of these fellows' eyes light up and just become almost scarlet with glee over having been phoned that Mrs. Bumjohn has just now gone into another break, and they're going to get her in there and give her an electric shock, you know. Gee. Also, some of these boys get so bad that a patient merely walks into the office, and they'll set the patient down and give an electric shock without the patient's consent. Now, by the way, these boys know full well that an electric shock never helped anybody. They know this, you see. I mean, they're not dealing on an uncertainty here. Very curious, isn't it? I've had them explain to me, well, if people in this sanitarium, the chief electric shocker in the sanitarium, explaining, well, the people in the sanitarium weren't given electric shocks, they would get out uniformly about 3 weeks earlier, according to our records and statistics, happily. And you say, well, why do you give them electric shocks then? Oh, well, that's the therapy which should be given to them. Now, wait a minute, why should the therapy be given to them? You see, what you would be arguing against there is you would be arguing from the goal of make them well. And this doesn't have any bearing on it. All we've got is a dramatization here of delivering effect. Well, all of this dissertation is not trying to damn psychiatry. It's just trying to show you how a practitioner can get to a point, finally, of anxiety about producing an effect upon an individual where he will do nothing but produce an effect upon an individual. And that puts your black case, particularly, at the E end of the line. Trouble your black case, he is at the E end of the line. That's where he is. That's where he's sitting. Now, there are a lot of little funny drills and things like that can be used on black cases, which unfortunately validate flows. But let's just take this C to E communication line and realize that the fellow is at E, that we have to do something about putting him at C. Well, let's take the simplest, not necessarily the best, the simplest flow process that we could give him. Let's just extrapolate a process right here. And we find the C to the E end. He's at the E end. We want him at the C end. So what'll we do? Well, let's just have this occur. Let's have him chuck objects away from him, regardless of what happens to them. Well, I mean, you could do this with opening procedure. Give the fellow a deck of cards and have him throw the cards one by one on the other side of the room. That's using live bait, not by mock-ups or anything. It'd be an indicated process. The fellow would then be at the C end of the line. Now, I don't know how many decks of cards he'd have to throw away from him before he started to throw an improvement and so forth. And as a matter of fact, I've never made the experiment of just handing pre-clears decks of cards and having them pitch them away from them in various directions. Never done this. But I have done this. I've had them pitch things away in mock-up. And with each time, a bit of a resurgence in the case. Now, you can do it with rejection-level processing on one of these cases. You can just fish around till he finds something that flies away from him, and then something else. And you'll find that such a case is it mustn't happen again to such a degree. You know, the case mustn't let it happen again. And if the case mustn't let it happen again, why, there you are. The fellow will be able to pitch one object, and he'll never be able to pitch the second object. So we'll have to change the second object slightly so that it's really not exactly the same duplication, you see. And then sneak up on him by changing it back to what the first one was. And we find out that we'll break down this mustn't happen again in terms of outflow. So here we have rejection avalanches. After you've run your inflow avalanche on a pre-clear, you can run a rejection avalanche on a pre-clear. These exist. They're the damnedest things. The reason you run your inflow avalanches is so that you can get a rejection avalanche going. You have to fish around now and get his rejection level. What is it that this individual can reject? And with such a case, you have this tremendous fight on the part of the case to get something away from him. He's got to get something away from him, that's all. It's all too close to him. It's crowded in too hard. His screens are smashed in up against him and so forth. And now you, with avalanches and acceptance level, you're trying to start an avalanche on an inflow. Well, that's all right, because those screens do have certain things that will inflow on them. And it is true that the individual will benefit from these energy masses which come in. Perfectly true. But if he can't do this with any certainty, he doesn't know whether he's doing it or not, he can't see these things, which is quite routine, ordinary in such a case, we'd better start the reverse avalanche, a rejection avalanche on him, at least on the terms of one at a time. Let's get things that fly away from him. Now, some of the darndest things will fly away from him. Solid gold Cadillacs, for instance, will fly away from him. And beautiful women will fly away from him. And pleasant surroundings will fly away from him. And a lot of good things will fly away from him. But also, you can get a rejection level on most of these that will fly away from him, too, that is very bad. You know, very low rejection level. Now, you won't get such things as bones and dust to fly away from him, because that's too desirable, that messed universe. But you'll get other things, particularly types of life, which are too upper for him. You know, a gorgeous horse, very valuable horse, something like that. Boy, this horse will go away from him, swish, gone. You try to get another horse to go away from him, and you're running up against it mustn't happen again. In other words, the super brace, the super control, and that sort of thing. Well, you can have a slightly different horse flash away from him. Now, this boy, if he's having a hard time with rejection level, you ask him to be 3 feet back of his head, you're actually asking him to reject his body. You just run pre-clear for class, and he says, well, there's one thing he's not trying to get rid of is his body, that's for sure. That's right. But there are things that he could get rid of. After a while, he could get rid of a body, too. So you'd build him up, working him almost on a straight wire basis, rather than a mock-up basis, looking for things he's certain he could reject. And then we finally start rejecting them in mock-ups, and we look for this automatic outflow. And we can turn on one of these reverse rejection avalanches. Boy, the stuff sometimes leaves these people like a hurricane. You know, they've got everything braced to keep something from coming in. Well, obviously, a little bit earlier than they braced themselves, a lot of things came in which they're still trying to get rid of. Individuals still can't do something like this, waste some courage in brackets. Waste some courageousness in brackets. But don't drop his tone right on down to nothing. This individual's tone can be dropped down pretty far. One of the things that would cheer him up no end would probably be a throwaway process of some sort. I say I've never tried this with a deck of cards, but by theory, it should be a process that would cheer up a case that couldn't reject anything quite remarkably. You just had to sit there and throw cards. Now, you could have a preclear sit there and throw cards with his hands, with his messed body's eyes wide open. You could have him do this without his being sure he was throwing the cards away. You'd be quite surprised at this. A lot of these people that are running on opening procedure right now are checking everything merely against the messed body. You see, their dependency on the messed body is terrific. You ask them to run opening procedure with their eyes closed, and you get a considerable difference. It's what they, as a thetan, are sure of. Now, let me give you an example of one of these cases that we call a circuit case. I worked this individual on wasting courage and wasting enjoyment in brackets for a very short space of time. He was in his body. And then I got the certainty he couldn't create anything, and certainty he wasn't creating the energy in brackets. And it fooled around with his case in that fashion, and it got some of the terror off of the case and something like that. And then started in on the basis of just pitching things out from him in mock-ups. Got his rejection level going, in other words. And was quite curious. But we had rejected two or three things, and he couldn't reject twice. So we started this business of changing the items, which would fly away slightly, so the second one would fly away too. And all of a sudden, the individual said that it was getting so dim and everything was going down so that he just sort of felt like he was suspended in nowhere. And so I ran time straight wire. That is to say, two particles, it's quite an important little process. Two particles he isn't trying to hold together, two particles somebody else isn't trying to hold together, two particles he isn't trying to push apart, two particles somebody else isn't trying to push apart, and so forth. I ran this on the way, and all of a sudden he started to get three-dimensional pictures of things flying away from him. Was all of a sudden a depth to the field. He was starting to run backwards through all space opera. You know, the terrific brace of putting space wagons through the sky and all that sort of thing had jammed everything up on his face, you might say, and it started to run this time process on him, and the space opera started to run backwards. In other words, planets were going away from him and roads going away from him and all sorts of things were flying away from him in front that had formerly moved in on him. This was quite amazing to him. We did that for a very short time. And then the fellow says, you know, I better let you in on something. He said, this funny kind of a visio I've had is actually my head. And I'm way down here at the bottom. And I must be about the tiniest particle that ever was. And all I'm doing is just sitting here watching all that crazy stuff go on up in the upper part of the head. And he said, I've always had the feeling that I was alive up in the middle of my head someplace, and I'm not there at all. I'm way down at the base of the neck, looking up into the head. And this funny front visio that I have and so forth, is the head all right? He's, I'm sure of that. But it looks like it's about 1,000 yards in diameter. This fellow's occlusion was the darkness inside his skull. He sort of had the feeling that he'd like a flashlight or something. If he had a flashlight, he was sure that he could shine it around on various parts inside the body's head and locate some of the objects, you know, like the eardrum inside and so forth. He'd know better where he was. It was kind of weird. He saw nothing peculiar in his request. He actually thought, I guess, I'd reach inside his ear or something and hand him a flashlight. Well, that's how one of these cases went. It was an interesting thing getting him exteriorized, because to get exteriorized, he would have had to have gone about, oh, I don't know, 400 or 500 yards back to be 3 feet back of his head. His sizes, you see, were all out of gear. And he all of a sudden remembered one time getting a rather terrified visio when he was about 20, somewhere in that age. He was very terrified by this visio. He's having a quarrel with his parents. And he all of a sudden saw this terrific old man's head right in the middle of the room, and it must have been, oh, about 8 feet from the jaw to the brow, you know, a big, huge old man's head. Well, that was his idea of what his head must look like. He'd never seen his head. His proportion, his relative sizes, was all out, and so, of course, you ask him to be 3 feet back of his head, he quite often would move 3 feet back, according to his proportion, which was 3 millimeters. And this would not take him outside of his head, and he would just get kind of apathetic about it. But we had to cure up on him, or touch the process, which refocused distance for him a little bit. See? We had to get distance before he could recognize this. Well, what process did this? It was just time straight wire, just that little process, two particles you're not trying to hold together, and so forth. And when we did that, he did discover himself. By the way, by the next session, he was completely lost again. We didn't get him out that time with any this and that, because the room was too big, and he found out he had to look too far to see everything, and the head was too big, and it was all that away. And the next time, however, we got him out by getting him reoriented. We got parts of the head he had some idea something was going on in. You know, parts of the head where the hearing took place, and so on. A lot of stuff rolled off about hygiene and anatomy and stuff like that that he'd been very harshly trained in. And then we got him outside of his head. But he considered himself to be a little black coal or something of the sort that was incapable of putting out any light or any beams or anything of the sort. And he was just microscopically small. So we had the body get enormously large, and then enormously very small, and then very large and very small in mock-ups. And we gave him, by the way, a phony body to do this with, one that had a pumpkin head and an oil drum for a torso and so on. We made this body. This body very easily, by the way, got to be 1,000 feet tall. He was trying to keep the body from getting that tall. And his most of his control was trying to keep the body down to size. He was really scared of his body. Wasting courage in brackets had unlatched the flinch mechanisms, which were right there. You know, I mean, these permanent flinches, which he had, and so on. Well, this person exteriorized, and then we went immediately into this type of process, which I was telling you about earlier in the lecture, which is simply the process of three places he's not, and three places he doesn't have to be, three buildings he doesn't have to be in at this moment, anything on that order which is locational, those processes which are locational and interior, exterior, and then also things which he felt he could reject at the moment, felt he had power enough to reject. We found out finally that he had power enough to reject the silence, That was pretty good. And such oddities, nonsenses as this came through before he actually could reject something. We started an avalanche on this boy quite accidentally. He got to wondering whether or not he could reject a baseball. And all of the compressed baseballs and boxing gloves and everything else, which had been bullets, which had ever tried to hit him, suddenly, just on momentum, started flying away from him. Finally, just overbalanced everything that he was trying to keep from hitting him, and they went in reverse. He never saw such an avalanche in his life. All this stuff going in reverse. Some of the material going on through and departing the other side, and some of the material then going from way off after it had gone through him and coming back through him again and departing out front. These were the manifestations, by the way, of regret. Regret runs time backwards. When you run time backwards, motion's going to go backwards. Your boy who is black is trying to run time backwards, so you get him to rejecting, you'll find things backing up in terms of time. Not knowing this, of course, entered into the processes in that particular case. Three things you don't have to know at the moment. Three things somebody else doesn't have to know at the moment. That sort of thing. Now, our main difficulty is emphasis of importance. Which technique is more vital? Which technique is less effective? It isn't a very delicate scale. Could be, but it's not. Where do you enter in these mild little straight wire techniques on location? It's when you're trying to get a person certain of his location. That's right where they belong. And when you've got him up there on a big certainty on his location, that sort of thing, that's the time to start chasing him around doing the grand tour. But you'll never go very wrong if you keep his attention on the environment or the nothingness of the environment, alternating him. Keep his attention on outside and other things and so forth, and keep his attention off of that body. You can do a type of technique which puts attention on the body, then off the body, then on the body, then on the, off the body, but that in itself is a validation of flows. It's workable. It's a less vital technique. Now, you'll be surprised at some of these cases. Some of these cases doesn't seem to matter what you run on. The fellow just keeps on going. Well, he wasn't having very many problems to begin with. Now, you get touchy on a case which is occluded and so forth. You get touchy about what you do. And because you feel this person is in such horrible condition that we ought to do something terribly drastic, we very often use drastic means. Well, it's the one thing this person can't take. And the one thing you should never do to an occluded case or a case that is having difficulty, great difficulty in exteriorizing, is validate his being an effect. You just never should do that, because that's right where he's sitting and why it's occluded and why he has a hard time exteriorizing, because he's on the E end of the communication line. So let's put him at all times we possibly can, let's validate his being on the C end of the communication line. Let's have him string that straight wire from C to E, from himself to the body and himself outside the body. Well, how do we do this? By letting him string wires to the environment until he has, to some slight degree, beefed up the environment to a point where he can own something, where he can have something outside of himself. This person, by the way, doesn't own very much. He doesn't have very much. Now, I want to give you, just here, just for a moment, a sample of the kind of processing you would do with somebody who is getting uncertainly exteriorized or uncertain about exteriorization. All right, girl, be 3 feet back of your head. All right, give me three places where you are not. Good. Give me three places where you're not thinking. Good. Now, give me three places where you don't have to go at this moment. Good. And give me two particles now that you're not trying to pull apart at this moment. Good. And two particles you're not trying to hold together at this moment. Good. Now, give me three places you're not. Good. Now give me three things you don't have to do at this instant. Good. Now give me three places you don't have to be at this moment. Good. Now be back there about 10 feet back of your chair, and let's mock up or get the idea of a cat's body. Got that? Now, let's pretend you've just exteriorized from this cat. All right. Now, duplicating. 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 Throw the duplicates away. Now, duplicate the cat's eyes. Duplicate them. Duplicate them. Now, duplicate them for use. All right, duplicate them, duplicate them, duplicate them, duplicate them, duplicate them. Throw them away. Now let's get three barriers that are not in front of you at this moment. Good. Now let's get three things you don't have to run away from at this instant. Good. Now let's get three things you don't object to having at this moment. Good. Now let's get something you could throw away. Could you throw that away? All right. Now let's get some more things you could throw away. Good. You can throw the body away too. Okay. All right. Give me three places now that you wouldn't mind in the environment that you wouldn't mind having alive. Okay. All right. Now let's get three specific ones in particular that you wouldn't mind having alive. Good. Now, let's get a nothingness somewhere around you. Mm-hmm. Let's duplicate it. Duplicate it. Mm-hmm. Duplicate it. Duplicate it. Duplicate it. Duplicate it. Duplicate it. Duplicate it. Throw them away. All right. Now, what's the realest object in the area to you? Okay. Get another object in the area. Good. Now let's put the emotion in the microphone of, I don't know, what emotion should you put in the microphone? You want to put fear in the microphone? All right, put some fear in the microphone, and while the microphone is feeling some fear, you feel some boredom. All right, now while the microphone is feeling fear, because to keep the fear on the microphone, you feel some resentment. And now you feel some apathy. And while the fear is still on the microphone, you feel some grief. And while the fear is still on the microphone, feel some exhilaration. All right. And with fear still on the microphone, you feel like you're a very personable person. Is that hard to do? All right. Now, let's change the emotion on the microphone. What'd you change it to? You put it in apathy. Oh, happy. All right. Let's have the microphone be happy, and while the microphone is being happy, you feel angry. While the microphone is feeling happy, you feel excited. You really feel excited? All right. And while the microphone is feeling happy, you feel serene. And while the microphone is still feeling happy, you feel apathetic. And while the microphone's happy, you feel in grief. Now, while the microphone's still feeling happy, why, you feel enthusiasm. Now, while the microphone is feeling just as happy as it's been feeling, you feel much happier. Got that? Okay. Now, while you're outside there, let's name yourself. Give yourself a different name. All right. Now, name the ceiling. Something. All right. Now name the floor something. Good. Now let's give the microphone a name. Good. Let's give it a personality. All right. Now while a microphone has that personality, you take on a different personality. All right, now while you're exteriorized, put the personality you generally have right there with yourself. Just feel like yourself.